Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 599 for comics originally released on January 30th, 2019. I am back home, but I decided it was a good plan to go ahead and do the same format we did last week with James sending his in his clips, so it just gave me a little more flexibility on when I could record and stuff. I'm actually doing this late Saturday morning and actually have yet to read the comic, so I'm going to be doing, once again, these kind of impromptu reviews, so it's week two of why John should take notes before reviewing comics. So with that, I'm going to go catch up on Teen Titans and then read the Teen Titans Annual and start with that. Okay, so I've had a chance to read the Teen Titans Annual number one, and I've got to say that the previous issue of Teen Titans, I think it was number 26, it worked a lot better for me than the first story in this annual, which is basically Damian and Jason, the current and the second Robins, respectively, fighting. And, I mean, it was an okay story, but there was really little more there than just an extended fight between those two, serving to shift them from allies to adversaries. And there were a few character moments here and there, but the story felt a little short and shallow. It wasn't bad, it just wasn't great. There was a box that was basically the MacGuffin, and apparently there's something crazy important about it, and it's like, well, what's in the box? Are we ever going to find out, and am I going to care by the time we do? So it was weak. It was not horrible. It was entertaining, but it felt like it was teasing more than it was telling. The second story, though, we start to get some serious backstory about the djinn, the genie in this Teen Titans group. It doesn't reveal a whole lot other than expanding on her characterization and giving us some insight into her. And she's a much, frankly, more dangerous and kind of creepy character than had been shown before. So I thought it was effective storytelling. It was showing, not telling, and there's still a lot more to learn, and I think we're going to get that in the next issue of Teen Titans. But I felt this did a good job of kind of, I don't want to say repositioning the character, but pulling back some of the layers and helping us get to know the character. And I thought the art on that story was just terrific. The art on the first story was good, but this one just was a cleaner art style. They also brought in Joystick from the Teen Titans cartoon. Been long enough since I've watched the cartoon, much less that episode, that I didn't have any particular recollection of the character. Although, frankly, he looks like he could be a stand-in for Jimmy Olsen. Overall, I thought it was a good issue. In the context of the bigger arc that's going on, the Damian versus Jason story, I think, was pivotal and played well. But I thought there were a lot better character moments between, say, Damian and Alfred and such in the previous monthly issue or regular issue of Teen Titans than we got kind of in that first story here. If you're enjoying Teen Titans, I don't think you'll be disappointed with this. If you're not reading Teen Titans, I don't know that you'll have the context to fully enjoy this. I'm going to go with a B on this. It was a good issue. It was well told. Even if, again, the first story felt like it was kind of one extended scene and not like a full story, if you know what I meant. If it had just been that, I would have been more disappointed. But between the two, it was a good issue and moved things forward in the larger context. So with that, let's see what James has to say.
Okay, so Teen Titans Annual number one. On this one, we have Adam Glass. He's been the writer of Teen Titans. This has been a series that I think John and I reviewed. It was issue 22 a while back. And the reason why, I remember at the end of all the DC comics, they were going into, you know, basically advertising that this is like an all-new direction for the Teen Titans. I'd never read it before. I figured this would be a good jumping-on point for me, or at least DC is telling me it's a good jumping-on point. And I would say although I wasn't completely caught up, it wasn't very friendly as far as like you know, getting a new reader up to speed. It was pretty easy to get into, though, and I enjoy the characters. Believe it or not, I like some of the characters more here than on Young Justice, which is, those books kind of remind me of each other as far as the audience that they're aimed at. Even though the writers are different and things like that, it seems like it's geared towards the same audience, the same people who like the same types of things. Now, there are some characters on Young Justice I do like more. Jenny Hex, I think her name is, Jonah Hex, you know, granddaughter or great-granddaughter or whatever it is. But, you know, I really like Damian here on the Teen Titans and some of the other characters a little bit more. So on to what's going on here. We have a spillover from what happened in a previous issue. So Damian bumps into Jason Todd and another Robin in the past, who he blames for an ambush and some things that went wrong on one of the Teen Titans missions. So he's blaming him, and they're, you know, going at it, kind of sparring, verbally jabbing. And then we basically have a nice issue where it's the Battle of the Robins. I don't want to go into too much detail as far as who's the winner, who's the loser, or is there a winner or loser. But one thing I will tell you in here, I thought it was very frenetic, the pace. I thought the action was pretty cool. I thought it read a little darker than Teen Titans. And what I mean by that, you know, got the fight's pretty brutal in here. You know, it gets kind of graphic, which I appreciate. But for those of you who aren't into that, just FYI. One thing also, there's a thing in here that happens about midway through the fight, which I wasn't aware of what the heck they were referring to. And this would be something where normally if I was recording live with John, we would discuss, and John would, you know, knowing everything about DC, going back to probably the 1970s, he would have gotten me caught up to speed. But there's a fight, and then there's a box that's pulled out and showed to Jason Todd, and I'm like, what is this box? And it didn't mean anything to me. I was just like, what is this? I don't know what's going on. What's the significance of the box? But I think it has to do with a long time ago, a little series called, or basically in Batman, Death in the Family. So I think it goes back to that, because I kind of did some researching online to find out what the heck's going on with that. But I really appreciated, or I enjoyed how it played out. I like the drama that happened, and it says into part one when you're done with that, and then it goes into another story. Once again, Adam Glass is the writer, but it's a different artist in the second story. Now, the second story, you have the remainder of the team, the Teen Titans. And what happens with them is it looks like they're in a shopping mall. It's actually the little comic here, it says King's Plaza. And there's a character named Joystick. And I actually really think Joystick's powers are super cool. I guess you could say it's a modern day, you know, villain, because he basically has video game powers. He can touch people, and he takes over their mind, and he can hack their brains, know their moves, control people, which is kind of cool. I like it. So you have Red Arrow and the other Teen Titans, like another Flash. I can't remember the names. The girl Lobo, Jin, and Cannon. I think his name's Cannonball. John would be helping me with these names, but I can't remember, and I can't remember off the top of my head. So anyways, these characters, what happens with them, they all kind of go up against Joystick. Some antics happen, and it ends kind of nicely. I appreciated the ending. The art style, although it's different, I did like the art a little bit more, I would say, in the second story than I did the first story. But both of the books are very clean lines, very good, very engaging. And I like seeing the powers of Jin in here. I will not tell you how it's used. I won't tell you how it impacts the story, but it was kind of cool. Jin, how she compares and contrasts to the other characters in the Teen Titans. So anyways, I did really appreciate that. I'm really hooked on this story. I'm really engaged with this team. Adam Glass is a great writer. He keeps me wanting to read more of these characters. So I'm on board completely with this. I'm just hoping that with Young Justice coming out that they don't do away with this team, because it's one that I really enjoy, and it's something that I would say it's a different flavor. Brian Michael Bendis has a certain writing style. He does a lot of, you know, long-winded narration, very decompressed, not always, but, you know, you'll get to full-page splashes where you'll have 57, you know, 100 little word balloons where the people are just talking back and forth, and it doesn't progress the story at all. And Adam Glass doesn't do that, so I love Brian Michael Bendis as a writer, but Adam Glass, I think, gives me a different thing that I like. Even though they're similar teams, I would say, with these teen teams, I think they can both exist. Please don't get rid of them, DC. And I enjoyed this book very much. Like I said, color art was amazing. It really pops on here. And I went with a solid B on this, and I'm curious to see what John says, what he thought of it. But with me, solid B, and I would tell you guys, if you are not feeling Young Justice, check out Teen Titans, because it's a similar teen team, but it has a different voice. And if that one's not working for you, this one definitely will. Or vice versa. If this isn't working for you, Young Justice will probably be right up to speed for you. So back to you, John, and for our next book.
Yeah, as I said, I have no idea what's in the box. Maybe they've set it up before. If so, I just don't remember. And it's Roundhouse is the character you're thinking of here. Cannonball is actually not that different of a character, although they look rather different power-wise. They're surprisingly similar. Cannonball was a member of the New Mutants, has been an Avenger, an X-Men, and probably a few other things over at Marvel. So with that, let's move on to our Marvel book, which is Age of X-Men Alpha number 1. So I just finished reading Age of X-Men Alpha number 1. And overall, I liked it, but I've got to say I'm kind of confused. I mean, I just read Uncanny X-Men number 9 and 10 this morning, and then Annual number 1, and all of that kind of ended with a certain status quo and whatnot. And this started with a very different status quo, and I can't see how we got from there to here. And I mean, the story here, like I said, is interesting. The art's good. There's a lot of world building going on here, both in terms of the story and the art's telling some of that too. And, of course, there's a fair amount of exposition to make that happen. There were a couple of decisions, there were a few that were just interesting, but, you know, don't really make a big difference either way, of Bishop seeming a lot more kind of like the ultimate Nick Fury than Bishop to a degree, and X-Men replacing Beast as one of the original five X-Men, and, you know, unclear references to what had happened at some point to some of the key X-Men or whatnot. But this was setting the stage for a new either parallel timeline or alternate reality or something. I don't know. It's confusing. And it follows kind of the what I'm going to presume are called the Marvelous X-Men, because at least these characters are going to be in that series after this. But the other five titles all got a very clear pitch and a footnote of, hey, follow Next Gen number 1 to find out what's going on here, or Amazing Nightcrawler number 1 for this, or Extremists, or X-Streamists. They haven't run out of X puns to do yet. It's amazing. But that title will go cover this, and Prisoner X will go tell what happens here, and Apocalypse in the Extracts number 1 covers this sort of a thing. And so if you like this subplot or this tangent or whatever, go read it there. So it's good. It's a pitch for all of that stuff. I'm enjoying it, but I was expecting a clearer lead into this from the X-Men Disassembled storyline. And I'm going to go with this for a bit, but depending how it comes out of this into the main X books or whatever, I may carefully pick and choose which X books I get back on, because this is a convenient kind of pausing point and jumping on and off point for me. So like I said, it was good. It was entertaining. There's some stuff going on here. It does not seem to be the world that X-Man was trapped in at one point during the Disassembled storyline. I'm unclear, like I said, how this fits into the bigger picture. And that's the sort of thing that does kind of bug me. But overall, it was good. Good art, good story. I'm curious about the six titles spinning out of this. I'm going to go with a B on this, and we'll see how it turns out moving forward. Like I said, it was just kind of confusing as to how we got here from there. So let's see what James has to say. Maybe he'll explain some of this for me.
Okay, on to our next book. We are reviewing Age of X-Men Alpha. So this is the beginning of the whole Age of X-Men. I don't know if you would call it an event, maybe an event. And this one is written by a whole slew of people, or not a slew of people, but Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler, two writers. And the artist is Ramon Rosanas and color artist Triona Farrell, which I will be talking about the art in this issue a little bit later. Age of X-Men, I don't know how many of you guys have been reading Uncanny X-Men out there, but Uncanny X-Men, which was a weekly shipping title, I think just for the first 12 issues, and there was three or four writers together on that, has been building up towards this event. Uncanny X-Men was hit or miss because it almost seemed like instead of a collaborative work, every writer was, you know, like let's say there was four writers, each writer was writing one book every other week. So there were certain issues I was like, wow, this is great. And then the other issues I was like, it's okay. It's so-so. Issue 11, I loved. Issue 10, not so much. So it was very weird for me. But when I got to this, I was like, okay, this is the thing that's kicking off. I'm not going to go into spoilers with what happened with the Uncanny X-Men. But you kind of have to a little bit because essentially the premise of this whole event is X-Men is recreating the world in an image kind of that maybe Charles Xavier would want where mutants do not live in fear. Everything's harmonious. When you open up this book, it looks like a scene from the 1950s. I don't know why it has to be in the 1950s and not modern day, but everyone's driving these old classic cars and dressing like they're in the 50s all of a sudden. I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. I don't know why. But mutants are using their power. Nobody hates them. Things are good. But it looks like it's the 50s, even though it's not, because there's these weird jets and modern things, so very odd. Then it starts up with a big, to do a little bit of world building. There's basically like a little earthquake that happens. And you come to find out it's this young girl, Luna, and she's coming into her power, so we're introduced to a new character. And the reason why they're doing that is they're trying to build the world, and they show you Warren, the Angel. He welcomes her to Luna to the school, which is basically like Charles Xavier School in this modern, you know, utopia for the mutants. And it's not really like a school like we would think of and like we've seen in the past. This is like a huge university. I mean, a sprawling university, huge, you know, multi-storied, very super modern. Way bigger, way better than anything that you could imagine, where they basically teach these new mutants how to really become better, controlling their powers, utilizing themselves, making themselves better. So it's kind of cool. So the whole utopian society is kind of built. And then it gets kind of weird from there, because you're like, okay, world building. And then at the end of the world building section, you get a little editor note, and it says, what's on Glob's mind? Find out in Next Gen number one. You're like, okay, that's weird. All right, so what's on his mind? Check this out. So then we go on to another story where there's a new love interest for Jean Grey. And I don't know how that sits with me. You know, she already had two love interests that are kind of still around, or one's back and they're both there. So it's kind of weird. Now there's another one. So it was just kind of odd that, okay, new love interest, whatever. But you get to the end of some weird stuff that happens in space. I won't go over that with... but inside of there, you get another dialogue box. Find out why everyone loves Kurt Wagner in The Amazing Nightcrawler number one. And then I started realizing you're basically... They've taken this big oversized thing, and you get, you know, four or five little... Some of them are bigger stories, maybe 10 pages. Some of them are 5 pages. Then the next one's like 2 pages, where it's showing you these people breaking in to arrest someone, and then what are they talking about? See the extremist number ones to find out. And then I felt like I was reading a catalog. for basically just rolling out all these new series, which is just, in my mind, a cash grab. I mean, this is not written poorly. It's not horribly written. I mean, it's just choppy, but it's choppy because they turned into a catalog where they're soliciting new things coming out in the future instead of giving me the ultimate jumping on point. Here it is. Here's why I should care. So basically, here's the thing. We're going to spin off 5 or 6 series, read all those series, and then we'll come together for the Age of X-Men Omega. I felt like I just read this a little while back, this same type of setup, something with the Alpha and Omega. Honestly, I just can't remember it right now, but it just happened. And so it's a little bit disappointing that this is happening again to me, because it feels like if money is an issue for you in your budget, you can almost cut this out, because you're going to have this X-Men Alpha, you're going to have all these weird things that happen in the middle, and then you're having Omega, which is going to wrap it up. You can almost just read this Alpha book and be like, okay, here's the, we're rolling out these new series, then go read the Omega in 3 months, and boom, wham, bam, pow, here's the changes that are happening, and then proceed from there and save yourself a lot of money with all these, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 issue miniseries in between. I just don't like that concept. I don't like that type of writing. It's not for me. It just feels a little cash grabby. If that's a word, cash grabby. but one thing I do like, this is it deals with a totalitarian utopia. You know, can one person be benevolent? I do want to see what happens with that. I do have it in my budget, so I'm going to read the thing. Who knows? John and I might review some more of it later on. I don't know. But it feels like it's building up towards a bunch of little stories that are going to be what-ifs, Elseworlds, that I don't know if they'll really impact, or they could have the ultimate impact, and that's where I'm really torn. But right now, I'm not 100% sold on this as a must-read. Now, something I want to tell you about the art. Normally, if I was just going based on story, this is something I'd give it a B-, maybe something like that, and that's being kind of generous. The art in here, okay, I don't know if it's Ramon Rosanas, the artist, or Triona Farrell, the color artist, but the art in here looks very flat. The color art, to me, is horrendous, and I don't like saying that because it's these people's livelihoods, but we have to be honest because we're dealing with a book where you guys are going to spend a lot of money. This is an oversized issue. You're going to spend $4.99 or $2.50 at Cowabunga Comics. Okay, when I go in here and I'm looking at this flat art, it almost looks like paint-by-the-numbers coloring. And that may take away some of the depth. It looks so flat because there's no depth to the coloring at all. You look at the characters, and let's say they're wearing a red shirt. It's just straight up red. There's no shading. If the background is blue, it's blue. There's no shading. It's just very weird. Everything is done very flat, almost like it was rushed and they didn't care. And it just makes it was really unappealing to me. And I hate saying that. And maybe some of you guys might love it. I don't know. But for me, it was just a little distracting at times, and I didn't appreciate it. And like I said, I don't know if I can attribute this just to the color artist. That's what I think it is. Like I said, it looks like it's lacking in the 3D. It's not sucking me in. Pick a different color artist. I may love it. But I went with all that being said, I was being generous. I went with a C+, and I think it may be something you could skip. But if you are really an X-Men fan, you probably would enjoy it. So I'm interested to see what John has to say about this, what he thinks. And on to our next comic. Back to you, John.
It's funny because, James, until you mentioned the flat coloring, I hadn't really noticed it. But you're right. It definitely doesn't have any of the 3D kind of rendering and lighting and dimensionality to it. And I also felt that kind of catalog vibe to it. So I think the two of us are pretty close on where we came out on this one. So with that, we'll move on to our next comic, which is Peter Cannon Thunderbolt #1 from Dynamite Entertainment. I've read some of the past Peter Cannon Thunderbolt titles and overall enjoyed them. The concept of him using a higher percentage of his brain and being therefore an extraordinary individual, kind of interesting. I'm not going to say it's hideously unique or even original. I don't know where that idea first came up, but it's been used well in the past. This issue started off a little weak for me, starting with an alien invasion followed by a splash page of a couple of, you know, random superhero types all pontificating while, you know, naming each other. Didn't totally work for me. I mean, I couldn't tell who these characters were really supposed to be, other than, you know, one of them was kind of an amalgam of Superman or Captain America, sort of, or Uncle Sam, I don't know. One's either a human bomb or Firestorm or something, and one's either an Iron Man or Ant-Man or Spider-Man type. I got the general kind of sort of archetypes, but they felt like props, not characters. And it was hard for me to get engaged with this world. And I think part of it was Peter Cannon's fairly aloof and hard to like. And he's the title character. If it had ended prior to revealing who's kind of behind what's going on here, I don't know that I'd come back for more, although I've probably pre-ordered more. I'd have to check. But the concept of who's the antagonist, I liked. It was interesting and gives a lot of potential for where this story could go. The bottom line is I didn't love the issue, but I didn't hate it either. The art told the story well and was good art, not brilliant art. There are a few places it was better than others, but it got the story told and it didn't get between me and the story. And actually, probably one of the faults of the art was how well it made Peter Cannon seem aloof and almost off-putting, which was in service to the story, but in disservice to me getting engaged with this title in this world. So if I've got more pre-ordered, I'm pretty sure I do. I'm going to go with it for another few, but I'm going to have to give it some thought as to do I stick with it or not. And some of it may just come down to if it's a mini-series like I suspect it is, I'll probably just ride it out. If it's not, don't know if I'll stay with it or not. So with that, let's hear what James has to say.
Okay, and on to our last book that we're reviewing. It's Peter Cannon, Thunderbolt. The writer on this is Kieran Gillen. And Kieran is a very good writer. Most of what he writes I enjoy. And the art in here is, I would say, above average for Dynamite art. Anyone who's read Dynamite books, take that however you will. But they have some art that is excellent, you know, very good. And then they have some art where it looks rushed and rough around the edges. This one, I would say, is a little bit above average, so I appreciate that. I don't know much about Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, but I know there have been other series with this character in there. This is my first introduction to the character. So reading it, I didn't know what to expect. It started off boom, bang, wow. The first two pages, huge splash pages, I was like, wow, I'm sucked in. I want to know more about this. This is really freaking cool. So that's how it started for me. Basically, it starts off with a big alien invasion of this Earth. Apparently, there's different realities, different Earths out there. And there's a gathering of these meta-agents from all around the world. So there's like I don't remember all their names. I'm going to try and read some of them on here. But there's like a guy named Nucleon. There's Supreme Justice. There's Pyro Forest. There's basically a lot of different characters. And these are the meta-agents of the United States, Russia, and China. They're all coming together. And they're here to face off against this alien threat as aliens invade the Earth. And then you get a view of basically Peter Cannon. He's just dressed in a suit, kind of looking out his window. Looks like it's in California in the hills. And he takes down one of their heroes. It's kind of funny as they have a spat. And then you kind of get a little bit of the world building, the background on the character. So here's the introduction to Peter Cannon. Peter has the power, I don't know yet, but it looks like it's of knowledge from different worlds, from different times, from different... he has access to information that nobody normally has on whatever Earth that he is on. And he's able to use that to basically get suited up, become a superhero, and tell people, here's the weaknesses, here's how you can deal with this, because his power is knowledge. So he goes to them, and he's basically talking to them, you know, here, you can attack by doing this. And In Go the Heroes, it's pretty fast and frenetic, and there's a lot of alien punching and stuff that happens. But then at the end, this is where you have the twist. It's not just a big, this guy dealing with this team, or these characters that have come together, these meta-agents, to deal with the alien invasion of Earth. You have this guy saying, Peter Cannon, he's like, this is all basically fake. It was staged to bring people together. And the, you know, Peter's helper there is like, did you do this to bring these people together? He's like, no, I didn't do it. And then you have the big mystery. Who did this? And there's a nice big twist at the end, which was very engaging. It made me want to read more, and it made me want to know more about this character. So it's very cool because I don't know. He may have a superpower, but I didn't see the superpower. I saw a nice, cool suit he's wearing, but I didn't see him do anything. So he may be a superhero. I honestly don't know. But right now, from what I know, is his superpower is knowledge, that he is able to help other people, you know, come up with a plan, a solution to attack these threats. Like I said, art was decent. The twist is engaging. The character, when Kieran Gillen fleshes this out, I think it's going to hook me. And this was probably right up there close to the Teen Titan book with my favorite read for the week. And I went back and forth. Is this better than Teen Titan? Is it not as good as Teen Titans? I think Teen Titans was a little bit better, but this was very good. And I went with a solid B on this, and I'm on board for the whole series. A lot of times at Dynamite, these will end up being mini-series, so this will probably be, you know, 6 issues and then it's canceled. But I would like it to go longer, and I'm on board as long as it's printed. And if it sounds like you were into something different than just the cliche superhero tropes and genre, this may be something you want to check out because it has a very different feel to it. And good job, Dynamite. Thanks for bringing it to me. And good pick, John, because I know John wanted to review this one. And I'm really interested to see if John likes this as much as I did. I went with a B. I almost went with a B+ on this, but I gave it a solid B. Good book. Good read. And then here at the end, okay, I'm done with my review. And I'm going to turn it over to you in a minute, John, to do some kind of wrap-up and discussion. John just came back home. He's been through a lot. And I kind of talked with him, and I was like, we just talked online. He's still going through a lot, and it's tough. You know, he had a lot of books to read, and he wants to keep the podcast going. It keeps him, you know, focused, his mind off heavy things. But at the same time, you know, the joking, the talking back and forth, he's not up to it yet. And I think we can all forgive him for that, because the stuff he's going through. And we're all here for you, John. We're all happy you're back in the States finally. But I think we'll be going live with our next thing next week with our review as we work up to episode 600. That's going to be a big one. But I just wanted to tell you, John, I really appreciate you even having the courage and the strength to do this, considering everything you're going through. And we're here for you, buddy. We all love you, John. And welcome back. And thank you for being you. And looking forward to talking to you live next week. Take care. Have a good one, guys. Until next time, I'll see you guys on the Slack channel or see you guys on the forum.
So as James mentioned, I am back home. It's nice to be back. It was a much longer unscheduled layover in Glasgow than we had expected. And I'm still not 100%, but I'm doing better. It's just been a rough 2 weeks. So just to give a quick kind of a recap, because I think I can do a little bit better job of it this week than I did last time. We had a great trip on the cruise. We saw the Northern Lights. We enjoyed the various cities and stuff. Dad really didn't go on any of the shore excursions or bus trips or any of that stuff. And we knew that going in. He was at the point where that was, between the cold weather and whatnot, not on his to-do list. But we had a great time on the ship, great food, very just enjoyable, relaxed trip. It was a smaller ship than we've done in the past. It holds about 900 passengers. A lot of the other ones we've done are like over 2,000. And it was not as smooth of a ship, so between that and the lack of daylight, all of us were frankly, getting quite a bit of sleep. It was very relaxing cruise in that respect. And then, again, the flight back went not so well, where he passed away on that early on in the flight, and we got diverted to Glasgow. We were there for a total of, I think, 9 days, and part of that was we needed to register the death, they needed to do the autopsy, stuff doesn't happen on the weekend. There are just a lot of things that when a person dies has to get taken care of. That changes from country to country, and it also changes based on if you are a native of that country or resident of that country or not. And everybody we dealt with in Glasgow was really incredible. They were very nice, very compassionate, very helpful in what was a very trying time for us. And I've got to say that British Airways was absolutely amazing in how they handled this. They took care of us from literally the minute things started happening on the flight through when we were on touchdown on Glasgow. They put us up in a hotel for the 9 days. Not a crazy fancy hotel. It was just the Holiday Inn, literally right next to the airport. If we'd wanted to move to the city center or something like that, they would have been happy to do it, but it didn't make sense for us to do it. And it was nice being that close to the airport with the kind of the delusion that we could go home at any time. And that restaurant or that hotel happened to have a restaurant that could do gluten-free, dairy-free fish and chips, which I partook of quite a bit, like every meal while I was there, sleeping through breakfasts. It just, none of us were sleeping well. By the time we'd get to sleep, somebody from some time zone, be it local or here in the States or elsewhere, would call us and wake one of us up and stuff. And it was good stuff in terms of it moved the process forward sometimes, or we'd gotten in touch with a relative we hadn't talked to yet, or something like that. But it was a slow process, which was painful in and of itself. And some of the relatives have handled that amazingly well, and for which I'm very thankful. A few relatives just simply couldn't understand why it was taking so long. Why hadn't we made the funeral arrangements? Why hadn't we figured this, that, or the other out? And that was and frankly continues to be rough. I'm recording this late Saturday evening on the 9th of February. It's been 2 weeks since my dad passed, and I'm able to say the words that helps. But yeah, it's still hard. And the funeral is going to be this coming Thursday, the 14th. Yes, it is Valentine's Day, but that's when we could make the arrangements, and it just kind of made sense. Relatives from Japan are coming out. Very much looking forward to seeing my dad's brother, his wife, their two boys. Our other cousin could not make it. She's a doctor, married to a doctor, and they're early in their career, and just they couldn't get the time off, which we completely understand. But it would have been nice to see them as well. And a few other relatives are in town already, and some are coming in, so it's a lot of that going on. The upshot of that is it's going to mean probably the Mayo reports are going to be a little further delayed, just so I can find time to record those. And, well, I don't know, maybe still crunch the numbers. I've still got to do some of that. That may be what I work on tomorrow. May not be, I don't know. But I really do appreciate all of the love, support, the prayers and stuff that you guys have been sending our way through the Slack channel, through emails, the numerous donations that have come in. It means a lot to me, and it really does. It has helped a lot. Just knowing that we weren't going through this kind of all alone as we sat in a small two-bedroom kind of suite or whatever at the Holiday Inn in Glasgow for the 9 days. Really, for me, that was extraordinarily tough, just being there 24/7 with my mom and my sister. The way my mom works through things and the way I work through things are very different. She likes to talk stuff through, and I just need some downtime, some quiet time, some personal time and stuff, and can't do both at the same time. But we're all making it through this, and again, I appreciate all the support and stuff. James and I will record live over Skype like we usually do with the next episode. That is actually episode 600. It's hard for me to believe I've done 600 of these, or will have done at the end of that one. Will have done 600 of these episodes on a weekly basis. That's taken quite a bit of time, and frankly, this is the longest I've gone without doing a interactive episode with a co-host for the Weekly Comic Spotlight since I started them. So getting back into the rhythm of that, I think, will be good. I just totally wasn't up for that this week. So I again appreciate James and his flexibility and stuff on this. We're 6 weeks into the new year, and coincidentally, I'm about 6 weeks behind on my reading. Out of the 150 or so comics I've gotten this year, I've read maybe 33 of them. And a lot of that's just the couple I've read for each of the different weekly comic spotlights and the couple I'd read, frankly, early in the year. I've read very little over the last month. Hopefully I'll find some time to turn that around and get caught up. I've only got, I think, 118 to catch up on, which isn't too bad. It would have been at least twice that if I hadn't cut back on the reading. Or the buying of comics to read. Let me phrase it that way. I've way cut back on the reading, but I'll get that under control. Mom and sister are doing all right. It's, again, been rough on the family. But we've been getting a lot of support from a lot of people, and really do appreciate that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I need to kind of update you guys on, other than, again, we're home, and that helps a lot. Getting home on, it's hard to really kind of get this across to one or two of my relatives, even though I've tried, that effectively watching my dad die in front of me on the plane was horrific. The 9 days of having to go through the paperwork and all of that was equally hard. But then getting on a plane from Glasgow, going back to Heathrow, staying at a different room in the same hotel that night, which it was good and it was bad. It was good because way comfortable beds. I think we all slept well that night. But rough because it, again, brought back the memories of waking up that morning, having breakfast with Dad, and all of that. And then, of course, we got back on effectively the exact same flight that he passed away on. And while we were on literally a different plane physically, they all look alike, and a difference that makes no difference is no difference. 10 hours on a flight where I'd watched my dad die, that was rough. I will give British Airways a ton of credit for, from the minute we checked in Glasgow, literally walking us through the entire flight process back. We check in, they put us in a lounge, they walk us to the gate, they get us on the plane, they make sure we're good on the plane, we get down, they take us off the plane, they walked us to the hotel, checked us in, squared us away, had somebody meeting there the next morning in Heathrow, got us back over to the terminal. We check in through a different ticket counter, they take us to a different lounge than we'd done the last time when things went not well. They put us in different seats on the plane. They gave us as different of an experience as they possibly could. And we talked to a number of people who'd been in the operations center, who'd met with the flight crew when they got off the plane and stuff, which really gave us the chance to thank a lot of the people involved with how well they had handled stuff on that flight, which helped me a lot. I think it helped my mom and my sister. But yeah, 10 hours on that flight coming back. I'm not generally an antsy flyer at all, but that was not fun. And then since getting back, making the funeral arrangements and other aspects that really, just in a very different way, drive home the fact that my dad's no longer around. It's nice to have the podcast, to have the community, to have the support, and to have something that I can just get back into the rhythm of and kind of start moving my life forward again in this new phase of it. I know I'm kind of rambling here, and this is a bit kind of indulgent, but I couldn't not talk about it on the podcast. If I were a listener and had been listening to somebody's, as long as you guys potentially have been listening to this podcast, and if I hadn't mentioned my dad's death and it just kind of fell out, you know, at some random point during a conversation my sister and I were having on a TV episode or something like that, people would be like, well, when did that happen? Why didn't he mention it? And rightfully so. This is about as big of an emotional upheaval as I can recall ever having gone through, and hope, frankly, to ever go through, although I've got yet another parent that'll eventually pass away. If you've got parents that are still around, be thankful for that. Talk with them, enjoy their company. My dad was one of my best friends, and that's I think part of why this hit me so hard. And I think it would have hit me even harder if he hadn't had some serious health issues about 3 years ago, which frankly at the time we didn't think he was going to make it through. And that was again a rough point for me. So if you've got parents, again, spend the time with them, be thankful they're there, and let them know you appreciate them and that you love them. I know my dad knew that I loved him and I cared deeply for him, so I'm content on that. But it's, like I said, it's still hard. I mentioned this a bit on the episode that goes up on Wednesday on the preview spotlight, but my reading habits having cut back or shifting much heavier towards DC and Marvel and the other publishers. So if you guys have stuff you want us to review in that area, or really any area, be mentioning that around the time of the previews catalog and stuff. If we don't pre-order it, we're a little less likely to go review it. And even if I can get press PDFs of some of the stuff, which I've done for Criminal, I did for Buffy and a few other things. Part of the reason I cut back on the comics is to spend less time reading, or less time getting behind on reading, I think might be the way to say it, although probably not. Anyways, if I can pick what we review out of what I read that, or what I've purchased to read, that kind of simplifies life and whatnot. We're not doing a previews teleconference this month. It would have fallen on the Saturday where I will have just taken some relatives back to the airport after the funeral and whatnot, which is the Thursday. They're staying through the Friday. I take them on the Saturday. And by that point, I think I'm just going to need a little bit of sleep to kind of go recover from all of that. Hopefully this status update didn't, you know, bore you guys too much. Like I said, I am doing better. I really do appreciate all of the support you guys have given over the last 2 weeks. It's helped a lot. So with that, I just want to say thanks. Join us next week as we discuss Batman number 64 from DC, X-23 number 9 from Marvel, and Walking Dead number 188 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.